talking about sports, but really we're talking about famous heads. Right, Moan?
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Vedder here. It's kind of weird that you pick an Ed song that has another name in it. It's famous Eds, but you're playing Jeremy.
My favorite Pearl Jam song.
I just got to say again, Ed Temple, for the people that didn't hear me the first time.
Now we haven't heard you twice, Moan.
Yep.
Welcome back at JMart and Ramon on Twitter is where you'll find us.
I can't wait to drop kick, y'all.
We do have a balcony nearby.
Yep.
We're brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage Doors here in Nashville. Just to cut you guys off, let's talk some pro football, as we just did, as a matter of fact, talking about Matthew Stafford. We bring in our friend Robert Mays of The Athletic. Robert, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing okay. We're just engaged in shenanigans, off season as they may be here in Nashville. I know you're a huge Matthew Stafford guy. We'll talk about the Super Bowl, but where do you think might be the perfect landing spot for Stafford?
I think Indianapolis makes the most sense to me. I think they're ready-made. I think that he could be dropped in there and they could instantly be a contender. And I don't know if I'm a huge Matthew Stafford guy. I would press the brakes on that a tiny bit.
Mm.
I just think that quarterbacks of his talent level and age rarely hit the open market.
Yeah.
When you consider that guys are playing into their late 30s, you know, into their early 40s now, I'm not sure he'll end up doing that. But he absolutely has at least three or four more years left. And it's not as if we need to imagine the last time he looked like a really good quarterback. He played at that level last year. I don't think he's a top five guy like he was over the first half of last season, but I think that it's proof that he still has something in the tank, and it wasn't that long since he showed that. So I just think he's an interesting experiment in what quarterback surroundings matter, in how much they matter. And I think that's exactly the conversation that teams are having with themselves right now. I talked with an executive in the fall. We were just having a conversation about something else, and Stafford came up, and he was just mentioning watching him warm up and how it's unlike any other quarterback almost. Like, with two or three guys is how purely talented he is. And then you need to have the conversation of, well, why hasn't he won a little bit more? And it's not hard to make the jump from that to he would win a little bit more in the right circumstances, and we have that for him. So I think that's the debate that's happening in a lot of NFL front offices right now.
Okay, so he goes to Indianapolis. We saw Buffalo. We know Josh Allen. I think Josh Allen's here to stay. I kind of compared him to Giannis Antetokounmpo a little bit earlier, just in that he goes home and maybe he learns something new and he comes back. The advances he made from year two to year three were remarkable. Stafford goes to Indianapolis. And then I still see Kansas City, Robert, and I'm just like, how do you beat them in a 60-minute football game right now? Like, it feels like we are watching the Jordan-era Bulls, and it's just a whole lot of really talented teams. The AFC has a lot of really good teams that aren't going to win championships because Patrick Mahomes is still in that, and the Chiefs still exist.
I think that's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. I mean, look back at the last two decades, and we just watched that. You know, Philip Rivers probably has a Super Bowl if Tom Brady doesn't exist, stuff like that. I mean, Peyton Manning probably has a bunch more, and we talk about him in a different way. And we might be hitting round two. I totally agree. And the basketball thing is so telling because in basketball, you have a seven-game series to do it. The best team almost always wins because of how much time there is, how many opportunities there are. If you come off flat one, it doesn't matter. Football, that's not the case. But with the Chiefs, it almost feels like they play a seven-game series within every 60-minute game. There's just so many kind of little pockets within the game, and eventually they always are there by the end. It's almost like that's how it plays out, where they're just so good that the best team always finds a way to win in their situation.
This year, well, this upcoming year, the NFL year, we're seeing a lot of just quarterback potential movement. You mentioned Stafford, but there's also the Deshaun issue. And then you got to deal with, you know, you don't know if Ben is going to retire in Pittsburgh. And then you got Tua that's possibly on the trading block. There's so many different issues. I mean, there's so many different scenarios that can go into what's the most likeliest that's going to happen this year. Ben retiring, Drew Brees retiring. We know that Phillip Rivers already has said he's out the door. Then you still got a quarterback, a savvy quarterback like Cam Newton is probably going to be on the market too. Have we seen this type of scenario ever before? And who's going where is what I'm asking you. There's a lot that's going on right now with just starter quality quarterback, especially Deshaun at this point.
It's really interesting, and I think that in the last year it felt like there was unprecedented quarterback movement with Rivers becoming a free agent, with Brady becoming a free agent, with so many teams, you know, swapping out who their starter was from the season prior, and now it's going to be even more ridiculous. And I think that's true for a few different reasons. I think that you could absolutely argue that it's easier than ever to find a competent quarterback because the pool is bigger. The rules are such that it's easier to play quarterback. I think that offensive coaching is at an all-time high in the NFL. You know, there isn't a lot of guys out there who are saying, we're going to do it this way because Bill Walsh did it this way. And I think that's one of the reasons that you've seen scoring so high. And it's easier to find a guy to plug in and just say, we can win with this guy. And I think that's why you're seeing this. It used to be that you would hang on to a guy for 15 years, 10 years, just because you were afraid of what else was out there. And I think teams fear the unknown now less than they used to, and reasonably so. And I don't know what the answer is with big-name guys like Deshaun Watson, because if I'm the Texans, I'm doing everything in my power to solidify that relationship and to fix it. Because I don't know what the proper price is where you would be better off with the draft picks than Deshaun Watson. Mm. I mean, the number to me starts at like 5 first-round picks. I know they'd never get that. But in a vacuum, I think that's the type of thing you would need to land for you to argue that your team is better off than it was having Deshaun Watson on the roster.
Wow.
Just because the hit rate with first-round picks, the positions those guys would play, and how important having a top-5 quarterback is. So that's the question, is how irreparable are some of these relationships? How upset is a guy like Aaron Rodgers? And I just don't know the answer to those questions.
Yeah.
Robert Mays, The Athletic, joining us here, The Athletic NFL Show. Definitely a podcast you should be checking out. Robert, Twitter is the place where nuance goes to die. It's always extremes on both sides, whether it's politics or sports. Tom Brady, you either love him or hate him, and then you base your opinion on whether or not he's good on that. And so what happens on Sunday is Todd Bowles' defense really is the reason why the Bucs win, and then everybody's pointing to how Tom Brady is the luckiest player of all time. Do we believe that Tom Brady is overappreciated or underappreciated right now because of the lack of nuance always surrounding that discussion?
It's a tough question. I tend to think that we overrate postseason success in how we think about quarterbacks, just because there is just an element of randomness to it to a certain extent. I mean, similar to what we talked about, it's one and out. It's not like basketball. You know, it's not like stacking up championships with a guy like LeBron or Jordan, where if you had the best team, you're always going to win. You can have the best team, and you can have the best team over a 16-game season, and it doesn't always matter. I think that separating Brady's success from Belichick's success will always be difficult. I mean, I think there was a stat on Sunday that he's now 3-1 in playoff games where he throws 3 interceptions. And that's tough to wrap your head around. You know, there are guys that have to play perfectly as quarterbacks over the course of their career because they carry their teams to those moments. So I don't really know what the answer is. I mean, I think that you really just have to go back and look at it each individual way. Like, let's think about it this way, for example. Aaron Rodgers lost on Sunday. So it will just say 1-4 next to Aaron Rodgers' name when you look at the history of his championship game performances. But no one's going to look at that game and say, Aaron Rodgers deserves to be blamed for that loss. He's the reason the Packers lost that game. So is it that crazy to think that those same sort of complicated framings could exist for every single playoff game that Aaron Rodgers has ever played, and that it's really probably something close to a 50-50 proposition, and just because a coin comes up heads 5 straight times doesn't mean it's going to come up heads the 6th time? And things like that are just hard for people to really dig into, but I think that's the necessary part of it. This stuff is complicated. And in Brady's case, what I was celebrating on Sunday is that it's really, really hard to get your team good enough to get to the postseason and to be on the tournament floor as often as Tom Brady has. And that should be celebrated. I don't know, and I think that getting to 10 Super Bowls, that's part of it. It's just getting your team there and being consistently great, not necessarily having this undeniable gene that allows your team to win in the postseason, because I don't think that exists.
For a guy that went to a Super Bowl in his second year, and like soon as we lost, I walked off the field and I said, we'll be back. And we haven't been back since. That's been over 10 years ago. So to your point, it is hard. And what Tom Brady has done, man, 10 Super Bowls, I can't imagine going back to that game, which is the one, like you said, basketball has a 7-game series. It's totally different. But I'll say this, in the conference championship rounds that we just saw, I did think those were the 4 best teams out. Buffalo probably is number 4 of that group for sure. But this Super Bowl matchup right now we have with Kansas City and the Bucks, can we expect this, in your opinion, to be probably one of the best games that ever be played with a young guy like Patrick Mahomes and a guy, as you said, in Tom Brady, that just seems like nobody says the Super Bowl is automatic, but he's made it as automatic as any, I guess, trip other than LeBron, maybe Jordan. Like, who's that automatic when it comes to this? So this matchup, hands down, one of the best ever?
Yeah, I think so, in terms of the historical implications of it. You know, the idea that we have the greatest quarterback of all time and the guy who, I mean, I think after last weekend, everyone can kind of admit, if they're being honest with themselves, that Patrick Mahomes is playing the position of quarterback at a higher level than anybody ever has.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the most accomplished quarterback of all time and probably the most gifted quarterback of all time, and somebody that, when it's all said and done, will be chasing Tom Brady's legacy, and this is going to be an important moment in that chase. So when you consider the big picture implications of it all, yeah. I mean, it's hard to imagine a better matchup than this. And Brady and Rodgers, I think, is similar when you think about what they've been over the last 10 years. But when you think about all-time football history and how we're going to talk about it 50 years from now, this is an incredibly important pivot moment for both Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes.
I know you like Brandon Staley a lot. Now, a lot of people were angry because they're like, oh, you go grab a defensive guy, not really recognizing that he used to be a quarterback, that he understands how to develop quarterbacks. And we all love Justin Herbert and what we saw last year. For people that might not know as much about Brandon Staley, why is this potentially a knockout hire for the Chargers?
I just think that he thinks about things in a slightly different way. I mean, I was reading, he talked to Albert Breer in the MMQB yesterday, and I was reading some of the things that he said. There are two things that really jumped out to me, and these are the type of things that made me excited about him before he got hired. He said that too often, if you're an offensive or defensive head coach, he said subcontract out the other side of the ball, and you just allow that to be someone else's purview. And the problem is, if that person gets hired away, then you have no understanding of the foundation and the principles associated with that side of the ball. And that's especially troublesome when you're a defensive head coach. And that's always been my argument for why you shouldn't hire a defensive head coach.
Mm.
Because if your offense is any good, and the offense is the easiest way to sustain success from season to season, that guy's going to get hired away. Exactly what just happened with the Titans.
Yeah.
And then you don't know how it's going to go. And Staley came out and said, we need a very planned out way of having a succession plan on the offensive side of the ball just in case we have success and someone gets hired. So you need a system and an infrastructure and an ecosystem associated with your offense that allows you to sustain success independent of one individual person. Even thinking like that is just something that I promise you Mike Zimmer isn't doing. And that's no knock on Mike Zimmer, but I just know that Brandon Staley, as a defensive-minded head coach, is thinking about how to sustain success on the offensive side of the ball in a way that a lot of other defensive-minded head coaches aren't. And when I advocated for a team hiring him, that was part of the reason, is that I knew he was going to be thinking about this stuff on a fundamental level in different ways than a lot of other defensive head coaches, quote-unquote, would be thinking about it.
So the plan is, if you have a good offensive coordinator, teach the guys behind him, so when he get picked off, you elevate somebody up. Is that what we can expect for the Titans this offseason? Because there's been almost no traction as far as hearing anything about guys that they're willing to hire as far as the offensive coordinator goes.
And that's the problem, is I think that they don't know. I mean, they're looking at guys like Pep Hamilton, guys from the outside, and I think they have to interview somebody from the outside, I think, for that position. So, I mean, that may be part of the process, and they're looking hard at internal candidates. But if they go from someone outside, then you don't really know. And, you know, it's hard to say that. Sometimes you don't have an internal candidate that you like if you don't want to go with that person just to say we went with an internal candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that having that sort of foundation and that sort of staff on the offensive side of the ball and being able to carry over terminology, understanding of personnel, all of that stuff. I mean, Ramon, you guys switched out coordinators a couple times in that 10 years. And I think that even if a lot of the bones of that offense were probably similar because of the way that Ben preferred things, it's still different when you have a guy who doesn't know the ins and outs of all of the players. And, you know, we called this thing in week seven of the 2017 season, and maybe we can go back to that. I mean, that backlog of experience and information within a given system and a given scheme just allows you to communicate and function at such a different clip than when you're starting over in any way.
Can I tell you what we did whenever Bruce Arians was relieved? We brought in Todd Haley. You know what Todd Haley did? He did exactly almost the same thing as Bruce Arians did. You know what happens when Bruce Arians? I mean, when Todd Haley was relieved of his duties, Randy Finkner did the same thing as Todd Haley and Bruce Arians did also. The terminology stayed the same. We added some wrinkles here and there. I think they did more on the outside with the concepts of routes and just getting the ball out faster. But that is the recipe. Now, I'm not saying that you just scrapped the whole thing and what the Titans are doing. I think the road to success leads through 22 and getting 17 to do exactly what you need to do. So yeah, there is some truth in it. You're going to continually find the same guy over and over again until you find a new guy. So really, really good point right there about what you're doing in this world as far as offenses go.
Derrick Henry, yeah. Travis Kelce, Robert, both those guys look like maybe they're on a Hall of Fame trajectory. Do you think Kelce's already done enough, or if he has another good Super Bowl, he's pretty much going to be a lock to get into the Hall of Fame?
No, he could disappear from, he could like be left over tomorrow and he would be in the Hall of Fame, like 100%. I don't know how you could argue it any other way. The guy has a Super Bowl. He has arguably the greatest 5-year run in terms of production in the history of the position. I think he has redefined the position enough to like have the impact on the game of football overall be there and to clear that bar. I mean, I don't know how at this very moment you could say he wasn't a Hall of Famer. Travis Kelce's been in the league for almost a decade. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as if he's somebody that stumbled onto the scene 3 years ago when the Chiefs ended up starting to be good. I mean, the first time I wrote about Travis Kelce and the first time I met him, I want to say it was like 7 years ago. He was a young guy, and I was a young guy. I mean, I think I was probably 25. He was probably 23. And we still joke about that, how long ago it was. So it's not as if this has been a blip. I think he's absolutely done this for long enough that if his career ended tomorrow, he would deserve to be in.
When did you realize he was special? I mean, I think we started paying attention to him here in Nashville when Alex Smith was still the quarterback there. This isn't just a Mahomes creation. Kelce, I think it's actually fair to say he's one of the top five receivers, period, in the NFL, not just tight end. I think he's completely transcended the position and helped kind of create a new position, kind of a hybrid between a tight end and a receiver.
Oh, I 100% agree. And I think if you look at the way they used him, it helps them dictate so much. When they use him as the backside, nominally the X receiver, which is your number one receiver, and those 3-by-1 sets that they use, that helps them dictate coverage. It helps them define matchups. I mean, it really is a big part of what they do offensively. I mean, I think the biggest example of it is if you go back to the Cleveland game when they were down near the red zone, and he was essentially locked on the backside in man coverage with Denzel Ward, who is a former top 5 pick, one of the best cover corners in the NFL when he's at his best. And Travis Kelce just left him in the dirt and scored a touchdown. Mm-hmm. I think it was just a little whip route. I mean, to do that in man coverage against one of the best corners in the NFL when you're a 260-pound tight end is just utter stupidity. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous that he's able to exploit pretty much any single matchup you put him into.
Yeah, and that's the weirdest part about him. You know he's the big body out there. You know he's the guy that can just – he's honestly the guy that seems like that breaks – all defenses now, him and Tyreek Hill. How is Tampa going to be able to contain, especially more than anything? Bruce Arians already came out and said it. Cheetah and Travis Kelce scare him. And I think that says a whole lot about, you know, them two when you have Patrick Mahomes behind center also.
It's really a tough question because if you look at what's happened over the past 2 weeks, I think the Bucs have found a nice little recipe for what makes their defense tick. Mm-hmm. And they've used press man coverage, I think, about 46% of the time over the last two games. And that is significantly higher, almost twice as much as they had on average during the regular season. Mm. And I think that really has unlocked an aggressive version of their defense, not dissimilar to the type of defense we see from the Chiefs a lot. And that has, you know, it's really married well with their pass rush. They're getting home quickly because there aren't a lot of guys instantly open. And it is a really nice recipe. Well, can you do that against the Chiefs? Can you go up and play really physical man coverage against Tyreek Hill? Or is that a recipe for disaster? And if you play man coverage, what do you do with Mahomes? He's going to be trotting around for every 3rd and 6 scramble for a first down. That's the problem with the Chiefs. It's not that they have answers to everything, even though they sort of do. It's that by virtue of the players they have on offense, they limit the menu of defenses you can play. And it makes the game even easier for them. They're coming at you from so many different directions, and that's why it makes them almost impossible to slow down.
So you have them winning?
I have the Chiefs winning. Yeah, I think it would require several bounces of the ball and turnovers and weird fumbles for Tampa Bay to end up winning. I just think the Chiefs are at that level right now. And you know, right now, the only advantage I think the Bucs have, I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about the game, if I'm being honest, is been in planning mode for Super Bowl stories and everything else, but instantly off the top of my head, I think the number one advantage they have is that their front four on paper is a mismatch against the Chiefs' offensive line, especially without Eric Fisher. And wow. We've seen that in the past, where that's really the only area that a team has a slight advantage heading into the Super Bowl, and it ends up dictating the Super Bowl. Think about, you know, the Patriots, Giants, Super Bowl. I know it was a long time ago, but that sort of stuff is tried true throughout NFL history, even if the game has slightly changed. So if they can dominate and really take over the game and, you know, create a couple turnovers that way, maybe they end up winning. But that's really the only area where I think that they have a step up over Kansas City. And I think it, at a certain point, if you start stacking up advantages left and right, it's really hard for the other team to beat you.
Rob, it's always good to catch up with you, man. We really enjoy the podcast, enjoy all the work you're doing at The Athletic. We look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Sounds good, guys. I appreciate the time.
Appreciate it. That's Robert Mays of The Athletic. At Robert Mays on Twitter. Really good Twitter follow. The Athletic NFL show is the one that I go to.
Yep.
It's my Monday workout from Sunday night.
I like him, man. He's very insightful. I like his delivery of what he's saying.
He also loves offensive linemen.
I mean,
he talks about the O-line relentlessly.
You know what? I appreciate that.
I thought I would just point that out.
I bet Kansas City would love a couple O-linemen this week also, or next week.
You are off the market, Moan. 615-737-1045 on Twitter, @JMartAndRamon. We'll be right back on The Zone.